Masechet Megillah, Daf 22. We have two main topics today. Number one is the Rosh Chodesh reading. How should we split it up in order to get four aliyot here with three pisukim each? This is very relevant since this is the Daf for Rosh Chodesh Shivat. That's perfect. And the second topic is going to be how many aliyot should be read on a fast day. Mishnah does not mention this. Should it be three, like a regular chol, or should it be four, since a fast day is more significant than just a regular day? So we begin back to the first topic. Mishnah said that on Rosh Chodesh and on Chol HaMoed we read four. So specifically regarding Rosh Chodesh, Ba'amine Ula Berav Merava. Okay, so Ula asked a question to Rava. Parashat Rosh Chodesh Kesad Korinota Savet Bnei Yisrael Matar Lehem Et Korbani Lachmi. So that's what we read. It's the parasha from Bemidbar, Parashat Pinchas, that talks about the sacrifices on Rosh Chodesh. So actually the whole parasha that we read is 15 pisukim, but we need to get four aliyot in here. And so the first paragraph, which is eight pisukim, what are we going to do with this paragraph? How will we split it up? Well, let's see the different considerations. Nikri tere telata pisukim, pishulahu tere. So if the first two aliyot read three each, then you'll have two left over. So you'll read Aleph Bet Gimel. The next guy will read Dalet He Vav. But then you're going to have only Zayin and Chet left over. And that's a problem because then if someone leaves early, they'll say, oh, look, there's two more pisukim to that paragraph, right? Then you have a pitucha. So I guess the next ole will read only two. That's what the person leaving early will assume. And then he will be misled because the halakha is everyone has to read at least three pisukim. So therefore, whenever we either finish a paragraph or have to leave at least three before the end of a paragraph. So we can't read three and three. So how about let's try four and four. Nikre arba'a arba'a peshula lehu shiva. If we read four and four, then we're going to have seven left over in the rest of the parasha, the rest of the reading. Beyom haShabbat havia tere ubreshuchot jechem havia chamisha hechi na'avid nikre tere meha v'echad mehanach en matchilim v'parasha pachot mishalosha pesukim. So if we read four and four, good, that takes care of the first two aliyot, that's fine. But then you have two, and this one is five. So the third ole will read these two and one from the next paragraph. Well, then that's a problem because we are not allowed to start a paragraph and read less than three. And this is because someone who leaves early, someone who comes in late, we'll see that, oh, look, the next ole is starting in Pasuk Yud Bet. And look, there's only one sentence, only one pasuk in this paragraph so far. I guess the previous ole must have read only one pasuk. They're not going to reason that he must have read more than that. They're just going to assume that he started from the beginning of the paragraph and he's going to then come to a wrong conclusion that you can read one pasuk, but that's not true. You have to read three pasukim. So that's not good. We can't do two and then one, because we can't have only one pasuk and the beginning of a paragraph. So that's no good. What are we going to do? Likre tere meha utlata meha pishu lehu tere. So maybe the third ole, right? The first two are reading four and four each. Good. And then this guy will read two from here and three from the next paragraph. Yud aleph, yud bet, yud gimel. Good. So that takes care of the third guy. He reads three into it. But then you have only two pisukim left for the fourth ole. And that's not good, number one, because he only has two pisukim, he has to read three. And also because you're not allowed to leave off, stop, when you're only two pisukim away from the end. Because then someone leaving will say, oh, look, there's only two pisukim left, and assume that ole is only reading two pisukim. So now we have no solution. That's the question, Tadava. All right, Amar lo, zo lo shamati, kayose ba shamati. Tadava's answer is, I don't know. I never heard a tradition about this. This is actually quite surprising because Rosh Chodesh comes up every month, and you'd expect that they read the Torah every month, so he would remember what they did the last time. But nevertheless, maybe they did different things in different Batei Knesiot, but they didn't have a tradition, a teaching from his masters about the proper way to do it. And so therefore, he didn't know how to answer it directly. But he said, I do have an answer because I can compare it to another analogous case. Ditnan, a Mishnah in Masechet Ta'anit that we learned not long ago. Bayom HaRishon Bereshit V'hi Rakia V'tane Ala Bereshit Bishnayim V'hi Rakia Be'ahad. Okay, regarding the Mishmarot, right? All year long, while the Kohanim and Leviim were doing their jobs in the Bet HaMikdash, Yisrael, in Jerusalem and all over the world, would also be appointed to take a week, and they would read special prayers during that time to be the messengers for to represent all of Bnei Israel for the communal offerings that week. What did they say? They brought out a Sefer Torah, and they would read on Sunday, they would read the first two paragraphs of Bereshit. And we learned regarding that the first paragraph, Bereshit, two people read, and Yehi Rakia, the second paragraph of Genesis 1, one person reads. So you have three aliyot. Good. Now, v'havinan ba, bishlama Yehi Rakia be'ahad telata pesuke havu. Oh, we happen to have this open. So here you go. Let's see how we can split apart these pesukim. So we have day one is five pesukim, day two is three pesukim. So that means the second ole will get three pesukim, it's its own paragraph. That's perfectly fine. The first five pesukim are all one paragraph. How are we going to split five pesukim into two aliyot? Okay, good question. So, chamisha pesukim habu v'tanya hakoreh b'torah lo yifchot mishelosha pesukim. So this, the first paragraph is only five pesukim, and we know that someone who gets an aliyah cannot read less than three. And we had, when we discussed this already, we had two answers, and those answers can apply to us as well. V'timar ala rav amar doleg u'shmuel amar posek. Rav says you should skip back. In other words, repeat one pasuk. So here's what they would do. The first ole would read Aleph, Bet, and Gimel, and then the second ole would skip back to the beginning of Gimel and read Gimel, Dalet, He. Very good. And then you get three aliyot each. And even though it is a bit of a problem, because when you read Aleph, Bet, Gimel, then you're leaving off only two pesukim. And when you start Gimel, then you're only starting with two pesukim before. But in any case, that is Rav's solution. Shmuel says, you split the pasuk in half. You take pasuk Gimel, maybe for that, because of that problem. He says, better to add a soft pasuk. Says Vayomer Elokim Yehi Or, period, and right, end of pasuk, end of aliyah, and next person can get up and say Vayhi Or, and that's enough for a pasuk. It's a full sentence. It has a verb, has a noun, and that's what Shmuel says. So therefore, we can apply the same thing here with the first ole, this is precisely what we do. The first aliyah recites Aleph, Bet, and Gimel. And then the second ole goes back and reads Gimel again and reads Gimel Dalet He. Reads Gimel Dalet He. And then you have the third ole can read till Rech Nechoach LaHashem. And the fourth ole can read the entire, the third ole reads all the way till Niska. And the fourth ole reads the last paragraph. So therefore, by repeating Pasuk Gimel, we can have within those first five pesukim, two aliyot, and we can end still with three pesukim left in the first paragraph. Okay, good. So that's his answer. But now, once we brought this up from Mishnah, from Ta'anit and the discussion there, we're going to continue and talk all about that. Rav Amar Doleg, Mai Tamado Amar Posek. Okay, so Rav says you should repeat the pasuk of the first day of creation. Why does he not say split it in two? Kasavar kol pesuka de la pesake Moshe anan la paskinan le. Oh, he says that any pasuk that Moshe Rabbeinu did not split, right? In other words, with the giving of the Torah also comes, although if you look in the Sefer Torah, you'll see there's no ta'amim. It doesn't say sof pasuk. And so theoretically, you could put whatever you want. But you can't, because it comes with an oral tradition. This is how you read it, and this is where you pause, and this is where you end the sentence. And so anything that was not considered a sentence in the oral reading of the Torah, you can't go and add one on your own. So that's why Rav says better to repeat and not split a pasuk in two. Shmuel amar peskina, and Shmuel is okay with splitting it. Now, challenge to Shmuel. Ha amar Rabbi Chananya kara. Rabbi Chananya, he was a reader. He was maybe a school teacher or a regular reader, so he knew the Torah very well. And Sesar Gadol Hayali Eser Rabbi Chanina Hagadol. His name is Rabbi Chanina, but he used to go and study with Rabbi Chanina, the great one. Ve'lo hitir li lifsok ela letinokot shel bet rabano ilu l'hitlamed asuyin. And he would never let me split a pasuk into two unless I was teaching kids. Because they it's difficult for them to learn. Sometimes you have a long pasuk and you have little kids and they can't handle reading a whole pasuk at once. So it's good to split it up into pieces. So Rabbi Chana says, I was only allowed in that case. But otherwise, no. So Shmuel, how could you say just split up a pasuk so that, you know, for convenience, so that you can have enough pasukim? So his answer would be, Hatam Tama, Mai Mishum Delav, Shad Hachaname, La'ev Shad. Over there, what's the reason why it was allowed? Because there's no other way to teach kids a long pasuk without splitting it up. And here too, the same thing. There's no other way to read have five pasukim for two aliyot unless you split one into two. So although in general, you should try to keep a whole pasuk together, but this is the best solution. Good. Shmuel amar posek, my tama lo amar doleg. Shmuel says split into two. How come he doesn't agree with Rav and instead repeat the third pasuk? Gezerah mishum anichnesin mishum ayosein. Oh, that's because of people coming late or leaving early. People coming late, if they see that, oh look, there's only you're starting at the third pasuk. I guess the first person only read two pasukim, and they'll think that's allowed, and you didn't read three pasukim. And someone coming late, someone leaving early will see that you read three, and there's only two left in the paragraph, and they'll assume the next person's only reading two, and they'll say, "Oh, I guess that's allowed," and won't realize that you're going back to repeat. So better to split it into two, and then you actually create six pasukim out of five. Good. A challenge to Rav and Shmuel. A parasha shel shishash pesukim kodin ota bishnayim. Braita says that if you have six pesukim in a paragraph, so two people can read them, right? Three and three. That's everybody would agree, no problem. V'shel chamisha pesukim beyachid. If you have five pesukim, only one aliyah. You can only squeeze one aliyah out of five pesukim. So that already is a challenge to Rav and Shmuel, because Rav and Shmuel, they said five pesukim, you can squeeze two into it, right? You can either split the middle pasuk into two, actually any pasuk into two, or you can repeat the middle pasuk. So why is this a problem according to Rav and Shmuel? Furthermore, the Beraita continues and says, Karad Rishon Shelosha. Let's say the first person got up and he read three, and now you have two left. And then what should you do? Hasheni kodesh shena mi parasha zo ve'echad mi parasha acheret. The second ole, he has to keep going. He can't just stop in that paragraph, even if that's, you know, the only paragraph that you need to read. You got to keep going and read one from the next. So you read two from the first paragraph and one from the next paragraph. That's Tanakama. You see, Tanakama doesn't worry about starting a paragraph and reading only one. But v'yesh omrim shelosha. But there's a yesh omrim here that says the second ole will read two pesukim from the first paragraph, right? The first one read three, the second guy will read two, and now when he goes to the next paragraph, he has to read three more pesukim from the next paragraph. And that's because he would say that you cannot, once you begin a paragraph, you have to read at least three into it. Good. Vim ita. Now, if Rav and Shmuel are correct, then the mandamar doleg needs logol, mandamar posek nifsok. Then what's the problem with having five? We have a solution. You don't have to go and read more pasukim from the next one. You can find three and three, even within a five pasuk paragraph. And the answer is shanei atam defshar behachi. Our Beraita is talking about a case where you can read more. For example, if you're reading a parashat HaShavua on Monday and Thursday. And so all you need is 10 pesukim at least, but you can read more, right? If you feel like you want to read more, you can go ahead. You have a whole parasha to read. So then in that case, it's easy to add more. But if you're talking about, for example, Rosh Chodesh, where the next paragraph has nothing to do with Rosh Chodesh, so it doesn't make any sense to keep going on. Or if with the Ma'amadot, you're supposed to read the first two. It doesn't make sense to go and go to the next day. Or with this reading of Purim, right? You only want to read the Amalek part. You don't want to go on. That's nothing to do with it. So there's no possibility of going on. That's why Rav and Shmuel say that you have to repeat or divide the middle pasuk. But this baraita is talking about if you can keep going, then that's a better solution. Good. Amar Rabbi Tanchuma, Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, halacha ki yesh omerim. Okay, regarding that case, when you can keep going, so halacha is like yesh omerim, that and once you're going to start a new paragraph, read three pesukim from that new paragraph at least. Amar Rabbi Tanchuma, Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, kishem shen matchilim b'parasha pachot mishelosha pesukim, kach en mishayirin b'parasha pachot mishelosha pesukim. Again, by Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, he's saying another statement that seems to be the same as the first statement, except it gives both cases. This is just like you cannot begin a new paragraph unless you read at least three pesukim from it. So too, you cannot end a paragraph unless you have at least three pesukim before the end. You can read all the way to the end, but if you don't read all the way to the end, you can't leave only one or two. You have to leave three. Okay, good. Now we ask, Peshita, isn't this obvious? Hashta uma atchalta, the second one isn't obvious from the first. We could derive it. Uma hashta uma atchalta dekam makil tana kama machmire yesh omerim. So regarding leaving one pasu, starting a paragraph and reading one or two pesukim, in that case, Tana Kama said it's okay. Just read one pasu from the next one. And yet, yesh omerim said no, you can't do that. Read three more. So shiur de machmir tanakama lo kol sheken de machmire yesh omrim. So then, if at the end of a paragraph, not leaving only one or two before the end, which tanakama even said you can't do, all the more so the yesh omrim would say you cannot do. So once he says halacha ki yesh omrim, I can derive from a kal vachomer that I cannot that for sure I cannot leave a one or two pesukim at the beginning or at the end of a paragraph. So why do you need to tell me that? There could be a reason. One might say that there are a lot of people that come late. And so for the people that are coming late, if they come in and they see, oh, look, the next guy is reading from Pasuk Bet of a paragraph, I guess the first guy only read one Pasuk. So that's a bigger problem. Whereas people leaving early, people don't leave early and leave a Sefer Torah there. I mean, unless they have an emergency. But generally, people are going to stay for the entire Torah reading. And so therefore, there's less of a problem to leave one or two pesukim at the end of a paragraph. So I might have thought that would not be a problem. So kamash malan, now both are problems. Okay, so that's why he said this that halacha. Good. Now, v'tana kama maishana shiure de la mishum yotzin atchuli nameh. Okay, now a real question on tana kama, because he said you can start the next paragraph and read only one pasuk. What's the difference? How come you can't leave one or two at the end of a paragraph because of people leaving? Because people leaving early, so then you should also say people coming late, and that's isn't that more often? We just said it's more often, so you should not allow someone to read one or two pesukim at the beginning of a paragraph. His answer to that is someone who comes late, he'll ask someone since he's in Bet Knesset, and he'll see, wait, this guy, he just read from Pasuk Bet. What did the previous guy only read one Pasuk? And someone will answer him and say, oh no, the previous guy read the previous paragraph also and just needed one more. I'll say, oh, okay, so he read three, and he'll be okay with that. Whereas a person leaving, even if a person leaving is less often than people coming late, the person leaving has no one to ask. He's walking out, and now he's just thinking in his mind, hey, there was only one or two pesukim left of the paragraph, right? I guess the next guy is only going to read one or two. And so that's why Tanakama is machmir one way, but mekel the other way. Shalach le'rabba bered rabad le'rab Yosef, hilchetamai, what is the final answer? What is the halacha? Shalach le'hilcheta doleg, v'em sa'i doleg. The halacha is that you should repeat, and it's the middle aliyah that repeats. And this, the middle one that repeats. Okay, so this could be referring to the original machloket Rav and Shmuel, which would be this. And so that would mean that, you know, the first person reads Aleph, Bet, and Gimel, and then the second Ole, which is the middle, will repeat Gimel and read Gimel, Dalet, He, and then the third one reads Vav, Zayin, Chet. So it refers to that. It could also be referring to the original question, which was about Rosh Chodesh And so the first person reads Aleph Bet Gimel. The middle, now there's really two middles because it's four aliyot, but one of the middles, the first middle, will read Gimel, Dalet, and He. And then the third aliyah will read from Vav down to here. He ends in a paragraph, and the last aliyah can read a whole paragraph. And so that is the halakha, and that's how we solve the problem. Okay, now back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah mentioned that we say we have four aliyot on Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed. And then it added a rule. Zakilal kol sheyesh bo musaf, and is not a Yom Tov, and is not, you're allowed to do melacha, you read four. And our question is always, whenever we see zehaklal, after we have examples and then a general rule, why do you need that general rule? So that's going to come up in the discussion here. Okay, but in the meantime, we have a question. Ibaya lehu, ta'anit sibur bechama, public fast day, how many do we read? We bring out a Sefer Torah, right? Like we do on Tisha B'Av, every fast day, right? We bring a Sefer Torah out and we read. So how many should it be? The Mishnah didn't say. Rosh Chodesh Mo'edika Korban Musaf Arba'ah, Aval Hacha Deleka Korban Musaf La. On the one hand, you could argue as follows. Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed, there is a Korban Musaf. So because of the Korban Musaf, that is going to increase from three to four. But here, a fast day does not have a Korban Musaf. So I would say, no, it's just like a regular chol day, and therefore only three. Or maybe it's not about the korban musaf, but about the extra prayer that we add. So just like whenever we have a korban musaf, we also add an amidah for musaf. On a fast day, we don't add a whole other amidah for musaf, but we do add anenu, and on some fast days we add a whole bunch of extra berachot in the Amidah. On some fast days we add ne'ilah as well. So there are extra prayers. So maybe the point is not that it has to do with Korban Musaf, but anytime you have extra prayers that are added, so you should also add an aliyah. And there, in that case, Tanit Sibur, we should read four aliyot. Those are the two sides. We're going to bring a couple of proofs to try to answer it. Ta'ashema, Berashe Chodeshim Cholo Shomed Korin Arba'a. So we're going to bring a proof from our Mishnah. Since it said on Rosh Chodesh and Chol Moed, we read four. Haben ha'tanit sibur shelosha. It didn't mention ta'anit, so must be ta'anit is only three. Yeah, that's not, well, you could try saying that, but emaresha. The beginning of the Mishnah said on Monday and Thursday and Shabbat afternoon we read three. So since it mentions only those and doesn't mention Tanit Sibur, I can infer that Tanit Sibur before. So therefore the Mishnah is not really helpful because it doesn't mention Tanit Sibur in either category of three or four. So there's no way to know. So let's try again. Tashema. Okay, listen, pay attention to this story because we're going to be discussing it a lot. One time when Rav came to Bavel, it was a Ta'anit Sibur. Rav originally was from Eretz Yisrael where he studied, and then he went to Bavel later and was started the yeshiva of Surah there, and he was the greatest of the generation in Bavel. So when he came, it was a Ta'anit Sibur, kam kera besifra, and so he got up and he read the Sefer Torah. He got an aliyah. Petach berich, he opened up, he started with a blessing, and you know, we said the opening blessing before, right? Asher bachar banu noten ha-Torah. Chatim vela barich, he read his aliyah, he finished, and he did not say a beracha after his aliyah. Neful kule alma a'an paihu, verav la nafal al apeh. Everybody said tachanun. Tachanun, they would say falling on their faces, right? They would actually go down on the ground. Nowadays, some have a custom not to do anything at all. Ashkenazim and some Sephardim will put their head down on their arm, so to do a little bit of falling of the face, but they mean falling prostrate on the ground. Everybody did, but Rav did not. Okay, we're going to have to explain all of Rav's behavior, but the most relevant is the beginning part, right? Why did he not say a baracha at the end? Okay, mikedira bisrael kara. Now Rav, he was not a Kohen or Levi, so that means he must have gotten the Aliyah of Yisrael. So how come he did not say a beracha after, right? If you read three Aliyot, then remember we said that the first Kohen says a beracha before, the last Ole will say a beracha after. So if this was the third Aliyah, third and last Aliyah, then how come he didn't say a beracha after? must be because he was expecting that there's going to be another ole after him. There's going to be a revi'i. And this was a fast day. And we can learn from this story that on a fast day, you had four, you should read four aliyot. Okay, that's the attempted proof. But it's not going to last, not going to hold. La rabbi kahane kera. That Rav kare b'kahane. No, Rav would get the aliyah of Kohen. Even though he was not a Kohen, someone who's gadol hador, the greatest of a generation, we give him honor. The point of giving the first aliyah to a Kohen is because we want to honor that person because of his status as a Kohen. But if you have someone who's the greatest of the generation, then that person will get the aliyat Kohen. In fact, Rabbi Avadja Yosef, in his Bet Knesset, would regularly get the Aliyah of Kohen, even if there were other Kohanim there. Okay, so therefore, he got Kohen. That would explain why he said a Beracha before and no Beracha after. But I don't know how many Aliyot came after, so there's no proof from here. Good. Now, question about that. Bishlama Rav Huna Bekare Bechahane Teha Afilu Rav Ami V'Rav Asi Dechane Chashiva Darad Yisrael Mechaf Kaifu Le'Rav Huna. Now, we know that Rav Huna, right, we brought a proof that after all, Rav Huna, who was not a Kohen, but he got the first Aliyah. So now we say, no, it's different. Rav Huna, it made sense for him to get the Aliyah of Kohen because his colleagues, Rav Ameh and Rav Aseh, who were Kohanim, and were very important people in Eretz Yisrael, nevertheless, they were subordinate to Rav Huna. So the other Kohanim, as important as they were, subordinate to Rav Huna, so Rav Huna got the Aliyah of Kohen, although not a Kohen. But Rav, when he was in Bavel, Shmuel was also there. Shmuel was a Kohen, and Rav would give great honor to Shmuel, even above himself. And so therefore, Shmuel should have gotten the Aliyah of Kohen, and not Rav. Okay, Shmuel, the answer is Shmuel, name mechaf haiva kayif le Rav. Rav hu da'abad le kavod. The truth is that Shmuel was subordinate to Rav, and Rav would give extra honor to Shmuel. But even though Rav would give extra honor to Shmuel, it wasn't because Shmuel was actually greater. And would only do that in front of him to give him honor, but when not in front of him, he would not. Because really, Rav was the greater one. And therefore, even though Shmuel was in town, even in the Bet Knesset or not in the Bet Knesset, doesn't matter. Rav would, certainly if not in the Bet Knesset, Rav would take the Aliyah of Kohen. Okay, good. So now we understand that story. It makes sense that Rav would take the first Aliyah de'i. Salkada derbi Yisrael kada lefanah ma'itama barich. And if you think that Rav got Yisrael, the third Aliyah, then why did he say a Beracha before the Aliyah? Must be he got the first Aliyah. Now you could answer, Le'achar Takana. Maybe this was after the Takana. Remember, in the times of the Mishnah, they said only two Berachot. The first one said an opening Beracha. The last Oleg said a closing Beracha. After the Takana, they said, oh, people are coming in and out, and then they're missing out on the Beracha. And so they said, made a Takana. Every Oleg should do one before and after. So even if you said he was Yisrael, he could have said a Beracha beforehand for the benefit of the people who came late. Wait a second. If so, then he should add another beracha at the end of his aliyah. Even if there's going to be a fourth, he should still have an opening and closing because you said it's after the takana. And we say, no, not necessarily. No, it's different. When the Rav is present, no one's going to leave early, right? If Rav is there, the greatest sage of the generation, right? Everyone will be embarrassed to leave early. And also they want to be there to hear the Aliyah from Rav, and then he's going to stay there and pray with him. And so nobody would leave early. And therefore, even if it was after the Takana, it could be that Rav did not say a Beracha after his Aliyah because no one would leave. And so therefore there is no proof either way about how many Aliyot there were, right? Because the truth is that Rav probably in any case got the Aliyah of Kohen. Okay, so we have no proof either way. So this whole source is not helpful. We're going to come back to discuss why Rav didn't do Nefilat HaPayim. Okay, but now a third source to answer our question. The question was, how many aliyot do we read on a Ta'anit Sibur? Tashema Zeh Kelal, Braita says, this is a rule. Kol sheyesh bo bitul melacha la'am, kegon Ta'anit Sibur, v'tisha be'av korin shelosha. So there you go. Any day on which people are allowed to work, and if you keep them in Beit Knesset too long, then they're going to have to be deprived of doing work. For example, so that would apply to a regular weekday. That's why we read only three on a weekday, because Torah Sibur, we can't keep people out of work too long. And then it says, for example, Ta'anit Sibur and Tisha B'Av. We read three. So there you go. We have a Braita that says explicitly it's three aliyot. On a day in which people will not be deprived from work because they're not working anyway, for example, Rosh Chodesh, nowadays we work, but there was a custom in many places that women specifically would not do work on Rosh Chodesh. And Chol HaMoed also, even though if it's Davar HaAved and we have certain circumstances, one is allowed to do some work, but really Chol HaMoed, people should be enjoying the holiday, going on trips, spending time with their family, and not working. So since they're not being deprived from work anyway, so Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed, you can add an extra aliyah and have four aliyot. But on a regular fast day, it's okay to work. We did talk about Tisha B'Av, how anyone who works on Tisha B'Av will not see blessing from it. Okay, but nevertheless, technically, one is allowed to work. Amar Rav Asher, Behanan lo tenan hachi. Rav Asher asks, wait, but this doesn't follow our Mishnah, which says Zeh Kelal kol yom sheyesh bo musaf ve'eno yom tov korin arba'a. Okay, back to our Mishnah. If you remember, our Mishnah mentioned two examples when you have four aliyot, and that was Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed. And then it mentioned those two examples. And then it brought a general rule, any day that has Musaf and is not Yom Tov, we read four. Why do you need a general rule? Isn't the general rule coming to include that Ta'anit Tzibur and Tisha B'Av? And that would be four also on those days. Right. Otherwise, what would be the point of the general rule? So that's a good question. Now, okay, wait a second, Rav Asher. Even according to you, who would be the author of our Mishnah? It can't be anybody of the people we know who opined about this. Not Tanakama and or to be Yosef of the following Braita, the Tanya. If Tisha B'Av is on Monday or Thursday, then we, since on Monday and Thursday anyway, those are days of reading, and we never want to go 3 days without reading Torah. So instead of reading Parashat HaShavua, we'll read something related to Tisha B'Av, Umaftir Echad, and we also say Haftarah on Tisha B'Av. If Tisha B'Av is on any other day of the week, Tuesday, Wednesday, or other days, Kore Echad, Umaftir Echad, since it's not a regular day of reading, so you only need one aliyah, right? The point is to bring out a Sefer Torah and read something, but we don't need three aliyot. Remember, in any case, on Tisha B'Av, we don't invite people up to call them up by name to receive an aliyah. People just come because it's not a day of celebration. So we kind of minimize that. So if we really want to minimize it, just have one aliyah. So that's Tanakama. So now, Rabbi Yosef Omer, Olam Korin Shelosha Maftir Echad. Rabbi Yosef says, no matter what day of the week it is, always read three. And never read less than three, even on Tisha B'Av. If it falls on Tuesday or Wednesday, always three aliyot, and you have a haftarah. Okay, good. Now, a question to Rav Asher. Rav Asher, you inferred from the fact that it says Zeh Kelal, that's an extra word, that there must be that there are four aliyot on Tisha B'Av. But the Braita that actually talks about Tisha B'Av says either three or one. So you're not following anybody. Good question. Okay, but now then what are you going to do with Zeh Kelal? What is the general rule coming to include? No, it's only coming to include Rosh Chodesh and Moed. Wait, you said explicitly Rosh Chodesh and Moed. So the general rule is not coming to add that. Okay, rather, simana be'alma yahev. It's just a mnemonic device. De la tema yom tov v'chulosh moed ki adedanin hu ela nakot haikela biyadecha kol de tafeh le milta mechabre tafeh le gabra yetera. So the general rule is giving you a mnemonic and a reason, because you might have thought otherwise. You might have thought that Yom Tov and Chol HaMoed are the same, and just like Yom Tov is five, maybe Chol HaMoed is still, you know, it's still Sukkot, so maybe I should still read five. So therefore, we give you a mnemonic to remember. This is the rule: anything that is more than it's than something else gets another Aliyah. How so? This is very important. This is the general rule for all Aliyot, and you could remember everything this way. On a regular day, you read three. On Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed, you have Korban Musaf. That's one extra thing. You get one extra Aliyah. That's four. B'Yom Tov Da'asu Ba'asiyat Melacha Chamisha. Yom Tov, you also can't do Melacha. So that gets an extra Aliyah. That's five. Yom Kippurim Da'anush Karet Shisha. On Yom Kippur, if one does Melacha, the punishment will be karet. That's more severe. So that will be that he get that, therefore six. Shabbat ikasu sikila shiva. And Shabbat, if one does melacha on purpose with witnesses and they warn him before and all that, then he would get sikila, which is the highest form of capital punishment. And so therefore Shabbat is more stringent, and that's why we add yet another aliyah, and that is seven. So that's all the Mishnah was saying. But Rav Asher, sorry, you can't derive any from the Mishnah something that is extra. Okay, this is really interesting because we just saw yesterday we learned a whole bunch of things from a Zeh HaKelal all over Shas. Whenever it says Zeh HaKelal, we learn something. But in this case, we say, no, we're not learning anything. It's just the style of the Mishnah to add an extra mnemonic, to add an extra reason. Okay, so this is good. Always good to remember this example where the Zeh HaKelal is just a literary style. Question?
Yeah, but then on a Ta'anit, it should be four, not three, because there is something extra in a Ta'anit.
There's nothing extra. I mean, just the fact that we're fasting?
No, that's not... you mentioned, no, we said something else that was extra in a Ta'anit. What did we say? We say Anenu, right?
We add extra tefillot. That's right. So in the very beginning, we asked the question, is it related to an extra korban musaf or adding any extra prayers? So the final answer would be, you're right, we do add extra prayers, but it's not related to that. It has to be something more official than that. It has to be something like basically biblical, that you would either add an extra korban musaf, or that there's an extra prohibition regarding doing melacha. So we're only looking at these biblical things and not a rabbinic decree to add some extra prayers. But you're right. I mean, so that, you know, Rav Asher maybe was following the other side, but the final answer is we read only three and the extra prayers don't count. Okay, good. Now back to the story. Gufa. Rav ikla lebavir batanit zibur. Kam kera besifra patach bere, berich chatam vela berich. Okay, when Rav went to Babel, Tanit Zibur, and he read the Sefer Torah, and he said a beracha before his aliyah, but not after his aliyah. Good, we discussed all that. Neful kule aman payu, v'rav lanafil alan peh. Everybody said tachanun and bow down, but he did not. Why? My tama Rav lanafil alan peh. How come Rav did not fall prostrate on his face? And the answer is, ispash alavanim haita. There was a stone floor. V'tanya v'eben maskid lo titinu bar sechem lishtachavot aleha. It's a pasuk. You're not allowed to have these figured stones on your land that you would bow down to. This is something that idolaters would do. They would draw or inscribe figures on marble or on stone, and they would bow down and prostrate themselves on it. So we're not allowed to do that. And this teaches that you're not allowed to do that in any other land. In the Bet HaMikdash, where there was a stone floor, you are allowed to do this. And a quick story, my son went to Anta Harabait about a month ago with another group of Jews, and they surreptitiously prayed mincha up there. And then on their way out, they all prostrated themselves. My son didn't even know what was going on, but they told him, they explained it to him there. And so they all did prostration on the ground, you know, like Superman style, right? With hands out and feet out. And so this is a actual halakha that now there's people doing this for the first time in 2,000 years to do prostration on Har HaBayit. Okay. And Ula explained that this is a problem only on a stone floor. If it's on a dirt, if it's a dirt ground, then it's okay. If you will feel like, or on your yoga mat or something, you're still allowed to do the Superman exercise. Okay, so that's why where the place where Rav was, he had a stone floor, and therefore he did not do nefilat apayim. Okay. Wait a second, then how about everybody else? If they were in a Bet Knesset with a stone floor, then what do you mean? How could you say everybody else did hishtachavaya and only Rav didn't? No one is allowed. And the answer is, no, in front of Rav, there was this paved area of a stone floor. Maybe he was in the front of the Bet Knesset on the stage, and over there he couldn't. But in the back, where most of the people were, was just a dirt floor, and so that was allowed. Okay, fine, then how come Rav didn't just walk to where everybody else is, and then he could do nefilat apayim there? That would be torach sibur. To have to make everybody wait till he goes, and then, once he was walking in front of people, they all have to stand up. And so Rav didn't want to bother anyone. So he just, he prayed, but he didn't fall on his face. Maybe Rav is the only one that actually stretched out his arms and legs. Everybody else might have done only put their head down, or maybe didn't do anything, or they maybe just bowed down a little. So since Rav was the only one that actually did that, so only that's maybe the whole floor was in fact stone, but Rav was the only one that did stretching out arms and legs, and that's why he didn't do nefilat apayim, and everybody else did it in his usual way. Everybody else did do it in their usual way. Okay, Rav, so how come he didn't fall on his face without doing stretching out arms and legs, right? Just bow down a little and not so much, or just on knees and not all the way down. No, he doesn't like to change his usual custom. Since he does it with outstretched arms and legs all year round, so it's all or nothing, and he didn't want to change the way he usually does it. Another answer, Adam Chashuv Shane could be Alazad, the Marabi Alazad, and Adam Chashuv Rashai, the Polal Panab Elam Kenna Ane, Kyoshua bin Nun, Tiktiva Yomad Hashem El Yoshua Kum Lach. A different answer altogether, nothing to do with the stone floor, but rather, Rabbi Alazad taught that an important person may not fall on his face unless he knows he's going to be for sure answered, like Yoshua bin Nun knew he was going to be answered and fell on his face and said, Hashem, please help us in the war. The reason for this is because the people will see, the Gadol Hador goes and falls on his face, the intense prayer. And what if he's not answered and, rain doesn't come? And then everybody's going to say, I guess he's not so great. And so we don't want people to have disrespect to the great sage. And therefore, they should not do nefilat apayim unless they're sure they're going to be answered. And maybe that's why everybody else did nefilat apayim, but he did not. Good. And now we're just going to explain all the different types of bowing. When we say the word kida, that's a type of bowing that is with the face on the ground. And because it says Batsheva, she did Batikod when she came in to greet the King David, and it says on the ground, so that therefore that's all the way on the ground. Kiri al birkayim, v'chen omer mikeroa al birkav. Kiriya means just going on one's knees, not faced on, not all the way down to the ground. Hishtachavaya zo pishut yadayim v'daglayim. Hishtachavaya is all the way down with arms and legs outstretched and the face all the way on the ground. Sheneimad havon avo ani ve'imecha ve'achechad hishtachavot echa arsa. Right, in response to Yosef's dream, Yaakov says, are we all going to come and bow down on the ground? So you see, this is also face on the ground. Okay, Levi, achve kida kamed rabbi ve'itala. Now, kida was even more difficult than the rest of them. Kida is face on the ground, but it's you have to do it in a way with only using thumbs, right? Some it's like doing a push-up with only thumbs, and that gives a lot of stress. You have to go all the way down and then bring yourself all the way back up with only using thumbs. So it puts a lot of stress on not only the thumbs, but also the legs. And so Levi one time was showing Rabbi how to do kida, and he became lame. He became limp Because of that. Wait, is that the reason he became lame? There's another story that says one should never impertinently towards God. You shouldn't say insulting words, because one time a great person did that and he became lame. And that was Levi. If you remember, right, we saw in Masechet Tanit, where his prayer was, Hashem, oh, you went up to Shamayim and you're doing your own thing and you're ignoring the suffering of your people. So that's an accusatory prayer, and it's too pushy, an inappropriate prayer, and that's why he became lame. So not because he did kiddah. Havehag gadmaile. And the answer is both. If it was only one or the other, then maybe he wouldn't have. But he made this terrible, inappropriate prayer, and then he did this difficult act. And because of the demerit of saying that prayer, so then in this act he was injured. And last line, Amar Avchiya bar Avin Chazena lehu leAbaye veAvad demasle asluye. One time I saw Avchiya bar Avin says I witnessed Abaye and Ava, that they would not do ishtachavaya. They would masleh, they would only bend down, they would bend over and bow or on the side or something like that, and they would not fall prostrate on the ground. And so you see that there were lots of different customs. Nowadays, I don't know anyone except, I guess those people on Harabait who were doing ishtachavaya. Otherwise, we don't see that too much. Even on Yom Kippur, there's different customs about how we go down. So that's really the only time of the year that we actually practice any type of bowing all the way to the ground. But you see, in olden days, different sages and different people had different ways of bowing and falling on their face during the filat apayim. Baruch Adonai l'olam. Amen ve'amen.